வணக்கம் நேர்களே, இந்த பதிவில் நம்ம பேச போகிறது வடநாட்டு ஜாதிய கட்டமைப்பின் இன்றைய நிலை, கள நிலவரம் என்ன அப்படிங்கிறத நம்ம பேச போகிறோம். என்ன இதில் குறிப்பாக பார்க்குறோம்னா, இன்றைக்கி தேதியில் வடநாட்டில் ஜாதிய கட்டமைப்புங்கிறது எப்படி இருக்குது, எந்த அளவுக்கு உயிரோடு இருக்குது, எப்படி செயல்படுது, அது மக்களை எப்படி பாதிக்குது அப்படிங்கிறது. இதுக்கு ஒரு குறிப்பிட்ட தனிநபருடைய ஒரு அனுபவத்திலிருந்து அவருடைய பார்வையில் இந்த தலைப்பை நம்ம பார்க்க போகிறோம். யார் அது அப்படின்னா, ட்விட்டரில் வந்து ஒரு இப்போ தான் பட்டப்படிப்பு சட்ட கல்லூரியில் டெல்லி யூனிவர்சிட்டியில் சட்டம் படித்து முடிச்சிட்டார். பட்டதாரி படித்து முடிச்சுட்டு இப்போ ஒரு வழக்கறிஞர் ஆகணும். அப்போ ஒரு வழக்கறிஞர்கள் நடத்துகிற அந்த ஒரு லா ஃபேர்ம்னு சொல்லுவாங்களோ அந்த நிறுவனத்தில் போய் இவர் சேர்றதுக்கு போயிருக்காரு. அந்த அங்கே போகும்போது இவர் வந்து ஜாதி வேற்றுமையை எப்படி சந்தித்தார் அப்படிங்கிறத ஒரு ட்விட்டரில் வந்து ஒரு பதிவாக போட்டிருந்தார். அப்போ அது பார்க்க படிக்கிறதுக்கு வந்து ரொம்ப உருக்கமாக இருந்தாலும், ஒரு முதல் தலைமுறை பட்டதாரி சட்டம் படிச்சுட்டு இப்போ தான் வழக்கறிஞர் ஆகணும், இது இத்தனைக்கும் அவருடைய நண்பர் தான் இந்த இடத்துக்கு போய் இந்த நிறுவனத்தில் இன்டர்னாக அவங்க எடுத்துக்குவாங்க அப்படின்னு சொல்லி தான் அவர் ஏற்பாடு பண்ணி அனுப்புகிறாரு. அப்படி போயே வந்து அங்கே இன்டர்வியூங்கிற பேரில் நேரடியாக இவர் ஊர் என்ன, பூர்வீகம் என்ன, உங்கள் அப்பா பேர் என்ன, உன்னோட லாஸ்ட் நேம் என்ன, இப்படிலாம் கேட்டு கடைசியாக இவர் சொன்னதில் அவங்களுக்கு நம்பிக்கை வரலன்னா உன் ஜாதி என்னன்னு நேரடியாக கேட்டுட்டு இவர் பட்டியல் சமுதாயத்தை சார்ந்தவர் அப்படின்னு சொன்னதுமே இங்கே எங்களுக்கு இன்டர்ன் தேவையில்லை அப்படின்னு சொல்லி இவர் அனுப்பிட்டாங்க. அதை இவர் வந்து இவர் நண்பர்கிட்ட சொல்ல வந்து எல்லா இடத்துலையும் இது கேட்குறது நார்மல் தானே அப்படின்னதுக்கு, ஏ உனக்கு வேணால் நார்மலாக இருக்கலாம்டா, எனக்கு இது நார்மல் இல்லைடா அப்படின்னு இவர் சொல்லி இவருடைய ஆதங்கத்தை சமூக வலைதளத்தில் பதிவு செஞ்சுருந்தார். அப்போ அப்படி பாதிக்கப்பட்டவர் ஒருவருடைய பார்வையில் நம்ம இதை வந்து புரிஞ்சுக்கணும் அப்படிங்கிறதுக்காக அவர் அணுகின, அவர் வந்து ஒத்துக்கிட்டார். ஒத்துக்கிட்டு நம்மளோட பேச, அவர் பேர் சௌரப் ராய். இவர் வந்து ஹரியானா மாநிலத்தை சார்ந்தவர். டெல்லி யூனிவர்சிட்டியில் சட்டம் படிச்சுட்டு இப்போ சட்டம் படித்து முடிச்சிட்டார். முதல் தலைமுறை பட்டதாரி. இவர் பட்டியல் சமுதாயத்தை, அதாவது வடநாட்டு அந்த ஜாதிய கட்டமைப்பில் சமார் அப்படிங்கிற அந்த ஒரு ஜாதி அடையாளத்தை கொண்டவர் இவர். இவருடைய அனுபவம் என்ன, இவர் பார்வையில் வடநாட்டில் இருக்கும் ஜாதிய கட்டமைப்பு என்ன, அது எப்படி செயல்படுகுது, இந்த ஜாதிய கட்டமைப்பு சமூகத்தை எப்படி பாதிக்குது, அடிப்படையில் இந்த பிரச்சனைக்கு காரணம் என்ன, அதற்கு தீர்வு எதுவாக இருக்கும், இவர் எப்படி செயல்படுறார், இன்றைக்கி தேதியில் வடநாட்டில் இந்த ஜாதியை வச்சுக்கிட்டு தானே அவங்க வாழ்கிறாங்க, அந்த மக்களுடைய வாழ்வியல் எப்படி இருக்குது அப்படிங்கிறத தெரிஞ்சுக்கிறதுக்கு வாங்க நம்ம திரு சௌரப் ராய் அவர்களோட பேசுவோம்.
தேங்க்ஸ் சௌரப் ஃபார் டேக்கிங் டைம் டு ஜாயின் அஸ் ஆன் திஸ் ஷோ. யூனோ, பிஃபோர் வி கெட் இன் டு த க்வெஸ்சன்ஸ், எஸ் அ ப்ரீஃப் இன்ட்ரொடக்ஷன் அண்ட் இன்சைட் ஃப்ரம் யுவர் எண்ட்.
Saurabh Rai, and I'm a final year, not final year, now I am passed out from Delhi University Law Faculty, especially my institute name is Law Center too. So when I'm the first generation law student from my family, and especially who is studying in the Delhi University and in the North Campus, because it is the hub of the election and everyone wants to take admission there. So I want to tell about the perspective of a Dalit student. When a Dalit student went to these prestigious universities on the basis of reservation especially. So what we have observed, that there was something, a demarcated line, that you people, because we, the general people, the general category students, have that prejudice that they have eaten our seat, they do not have the merit. And the first incident I recall, because my batch was unfortunately batch of the COVID, our classes went online in first three semesters. So the first incident was, I recall that when there was a boy from a Brahmin community, and he starts speaking about reservation, that you have eaten our seats and all these things. So it was because nobody is saying, nobody is talking about it, especially from our community, from the Dalit community. And so I have read Dr. Ambedkar, Periyar, and our these leaders, Saab Kanshiram, and all these leaders. So I have that scenario, I have that knowledge that it is going to affect my students. It is going to affect our students, because our students feel that they will be in trouble if they speak in the front of the students, and especially the right wingers in our college are much more active right now. So I raised an objection, because I haven't said that why are you saying like this. I said, because he said that I am a poor Brahmin. Then it was, I have learned that there are different castes in the Brahmin also. Then I said that, oh, you are a good Brahmin. Then he said, yes, we are the superior one. Then I said that, okay, then you are the superior one. And there was another boy in the group also who was also talking about reservation, who was a Bhumiar Brahmin. So I said that, okay, first of all, you should decide amongst yourself that who is the superior. Because Bhumiar is saying that I am the superior, and Goat Brahmin is saying that I am the superior. Then I said that, first of all, you should decide that who is the superior. Then I will come on to the topic of reservation. So they started fighting amongst themselves. So we have to tackle them accordingly. I don't think so that we need to say that why you are saying about reservation. We have to first talk about their supremacy. That you should decide that who is the superior. You think that we are inferior than you, then you should first decide that who is superior from yourself. Then then what happened, that they said that it is nothing to, you know, nothing to be decided. Then they started talking about EWS reservation at that time. Then I said that if you are talking about EWS reservation, the cap is 8 lakh something. And if I want to take a scholarship, then I have to show that my annual income is 2.5 lakh. Because there was an issue in the college that we have to get scholarship of 4,500 per month. So I said that why it is so. You are saying that EWS, that people who is earning, a student who is earning 8 lakh per annum, is poor. Then why a SCST student family earning 2.5 lakh, above than 2.5 lakh, is not poor? They should also get the benefit of that scholarship. Then they said that it is the rule of the UGC. Then I said that it is not the rule of UGC. It is the casteism which is practiced by the UGC. It is practiced by the university. You can take it normally, but it is not normal at all. So the my CR, she was a girl from OBC community. Then she texted that you should stop that fight, and she restricted the WhatsApp group of my class. So it was the first incident. Then it was somewhere shocking also that because nobody from our community, from especially Bahujan community, have revolted against them. I was only the person who was saying that why it is so. So I felt that it is not a normal thing that our students are being quiet at that time. And somewhere I also understand the reason that they belong to that particular family, and they have that different upbringings. So it was the first incident in the university I just shared with you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Thanks for that. And I do agree. A lot of these problems persist largely because the counter argument never materialized, and people who had the opportunity to speak just chose not to speak for various reasons that they might alone know. But just because the counter voice never materialized, the argument that was put forward in the first place was just assumed to be correct. your logic of picking out the definition of poor, comparing the economic class for the SEST people under reservation system and the EWS system that was recently introduced. That is a classic example of that. But I think the times are changing. This very conversation that we are having is also an example of one such thing. But we need to develop this counter argument and place it in public domain, not necessarily to irritate or annoy or get back at someone, but to let our fellow citizens understand what the reality is. You know, even those two stakeholders whom you said spoke about reservation and found you guilty of taking away their seat and so on. The way I see it, they are also victims of that sort of a propaganda. What they believe as true is not necessarily true. But then their inability to differentiate the fact from propaganda is doubling down. You know, it is not just in their thought, it is coming out in their words and deeds, and to the extent of them engaging in caste-based hate crime, you know, be it actual full-on violence using a weapon or just discriminating or insulting fellow citizens in a work atmosphere or in an educational institution, as you said. Now, coming back to that particular activity, you know, where this caste bias, translates from thought into words and deeds, can you briefly describe what you went through in your internship experience?
Okay, so I went to the nearest thesis article in Delhi. So what happened that it was not an interview, it was a meeting with the advocate from the reference of my friend. So I went to him at around 12 p.m. I think, 11 a.m. sorry. So when I entered in the chamber, there were I think around 6 to 7 advocates sitting there, and the advocate under whom I have to do internship asked me about my name, that what is your name. Then I said that my name is Swarup Rai. Then he said that okay, you are Swarup Rai, so you are from Rai or from Bengal or UP Bihar, so you are from where? Then I said, sir, I am from Sonipat, Haryana. Then he said, okay, you are from Sonipat, Haryana. But then he replied that are you migrated or what? From where does your father ancestry belongs to? Then I said that my native village is Bhanswar in Sonipat. Then he said, okay, it's fine. Then he started doing some work of around 15 to 20 minutes. Then he started and said that, oh, who are Rais? Ye Rai kaun hote hain? Then I said that, sir, my original surname is not Rai. My original surname is Gadgujar. And he says that, okay. Then he again started his work. Then he again, 15 to 20 minutes, he says that, who are Gadgujars? They are Gujars or not, or who are they? Then I said, sorry, sir. And he said that, what is your caste? Then I said, sir, I belongs to Chamar community, who comes under the scheduled caste. Then he also felt some shock because his behavior started changes. His expressions started changes, because all 7 advocates who were sitting there, I was the one who was very well dressed than them, and he even started pointing out my pen. I was having some 2 expensive pens which was gifted by me to me. Then he started that, from where do you these pens belongs to? आप कहाँ से लेकर आ रहे हो? Then I said, sir, they are gifted for me. Then okay. Then he said, okay. Then he started. He said that, see, we do not no longer need an intern, because. Then I said, sir, Then I was also shocked that you do not need any intern. Then I somewhere also felt that, like, I know what was the reason. My caste was the only reason, because he haven't asked about my, that which is your favorite subject. Even he even didn't ask about my college, that from which institution do you belong. Then I said that, okay, that is the main problem, that is the main problem. My caste became the major problem there, because most of the people, everyone was, you know, somewhere getting uncomfortable by my words, that what I have said, that I proudly said that it was not humiliated, that I was not even feeling inferior in about in telling my caste. Then I said that I belong to the Chamar community, becoming under the category of scheduled caste. Then the meeting ended. After that, then he said that we do not need an intern, and the meeting ended. That's all. I went out to the office, and my friend, I called my friend, then this, that had happened. So he said that it is the normal question. I said that it can be a normal question for you. It is not a normal question for me. Asking about my caste, asking about my region, asking about my father, again and again, emphasizing on this point that from where do you belong? From where your ancestry belongs? Then it is not a normal question at all for me, because I am very well aware that how the people get to know about the caste. And I said that he is not going to teach me, then that he is going to teach an upper caste, so-called upper caste student, so-called upper caste intern. That was the incident. And somewhere I felt that it is not a, I'm not the first person to which this thing had happened. I was the first person, I was the first student who spoke about it, that it happened, but nobody is going to share about it. Even my colleagues, my batchmates who were scheduled caste called me, texted me that this had happened with me, us also, but we were feared. That we were feared that you should not, that we have to get, you know, it will take our opportunities. And I said that you might be feared, but I don't fear of you. Why should I fear? I have all the rights which a normal person, which a general category person have. That was the main issue. My caste became the major issue there. So it all had happened there.
Now this event happened in a Delhi-based law firm. Is my understanding correct? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now what you say is about the same even here in the South, except people are a bit more concerned. The audacity with which the person asked, inquired about your ancestry and caste, that is just outrageous in my view, or even in comparison with what happens in South. But the same caste feeling definitely exists. I wouldn't generalize and say everyone has that, but those who have it, you know, my personal experience is when I was interviewed by a Brahmin who apparently was more keen on recruiting a Brahmin under him. Halfway through the interview, he would pinch his left shoulder. So they wear that white thread, Yajnopavita. Around here, that is like that. Yeah, it's a video call. And so he's like, you do this. And then if you also do this, then it's like, oh, I'm a Brahmin. And you also say, I'm a Brahmin. And then the smiles follow. Or in some other cases, they have acronyms. And I had witnessed two Brahmins verifying each other that they are Brahmins in that discussion. Only thing, they weren't aware that I have other Brahmin friends who have been open to me about those acronyms that they use. So this Gaud Brahmin that you mentioned, so they have a GSB, you know, that sort of identity. They'll just say GSB, GSB. And then they'll give each other a smile. And it would seem like they are just confirming if they are from the same institute. But the institute they are referring to is the institution of caste.
So here, while the feeling exists, nobody would directly ask that. But there have been some instances like what you have narrated. But my other question is, did you go into the law firm with the knowledge that they were recruiting an intern, there is an open position, and that is why your friend had suggested you go there? Is that what happened?
Actually, I would not like to say that
Okay.
nobody is going to say that I am a brilliant, brilliant student, but
Hmm.
I am a well-qualified student in my class who is much more, above than in the knowledge that the students in my class. Then my friend also know that he is very well qualified and you know all the things, most of the things which an intern needed. Because I have taught some students in my college and they are getting passed with good marks. And my friend, who was an intern under him, I also told him, I also make him studying for the examinations. So he know my capability, that I am very well capable of all these things. Then he said that he suggested my name because he's my good friend. Then I said that I want to do an internship because I was preparing for the judiciary. So I think that I should do 2 or 3 months internship for that so that I can understand the court procedure. Because the theory is not applicable in the court procedure. It needs practical knowledge. Then I said that let us do an internship. Then this all had happened. So my qualifications, sorry.
Oh, it's okay. So, sorry to interrupt. So I was about to confirm. So your friend believed in your capabilities and therefore he suggested your name for a discussion. So you were sent in for a conversation for a potential recruitment, but the person at the other end, once he realized you come from a SCAST Dalit community, he kind of changed the conversation and he decided not to recruit you.
Yeah, of course. Even he didn't ask about my qualifications. But then in a normal interview, they asked about from which college do you have, which is your favorite subject, why do you like this favorite subject? He even asked about it. That which is your favorite subject, from which institution do you belong?
Is this common in that part of our country for people to directly ask the other person, especially in such professional atmospheres or environments, to directly ask the other
See,
person what caste you come from? Is it normal there?
no, they directly do not ask that question. I have told you that he first starting by asking my surname. Because he knows that which surname is in which caste. Then he got confused that why are not in the Sonipat, Haryana. And I also said that my ancestry belongs to the Sonipat, Haryana. Then the doubt came in his mind. Then he asked that, Rai, who are Rais? Rai Kono Kais? Then I said that my surname is not Rai, sir. My surname is Bhat. Then he again got confused. Then, but Gujars, are you Gujar or what? Then I said that, sorry sir, what do you want to ask like that? Then he said that, what is your caste? Directly he said that, what is your caste? Then I replied that, sir, my caste is Samar, I belong to the Samar community. We come under the scheduled caste. And although I was very well aware of these things, but somewhere we have that we got the moment was very, what we call it? It was very annoying. Like I get very humiliated at that time. That what he is asking, man. He is a senior advocate. He has a good experience. But he is asking. Although these things happened, it is a very common thing, but asking directly about caste is not a common thing. then that you straightly ask the question that what is your past life.
Does that mean that, you know, in and around Delhi, if someone is a Dalit, they have to cover up their Dalit identity for the sake of survival? Is that the situation there?
Is that the situation? This is the situation in the legal profession. That first of all, there is only a single senior advocate in the Supreme Court till now in the history from the SC community. If you go recently, the data has came that only 3% of scheduled caste were suggested by the collegium to elevated as them high court judges. So what does it show? This is a situation because our people are not economically, you know, stronger. So our people, our lawyers hide their identity to get the high profile clients. This is a situation.
Now,
so yeah,
go ahead, please.
I just want to raise one point. So, and the thing in the most of the law colleges, especially in the government law colleges where we have that reservation criteria, the thing is that doing internship in this legal profession is not an easy job for an SC student. He get indulged with a general caste student who makes him to indulge in an internship. This is the failure, I think this is the failure of the whole community, that you have a lot of lawyers, you have the associations of lawyers, but you are not coming in these universities to recruit the interns from our community. Baba Saheb also said that educate, agitate and organize, but the lawyers are doing of our community. They are not doing anything for the interns. That is the main problem.
Now, some months back, I got an opportunity to visit the Delhi region, specifically Noida. And when I was in Noida, I realized, I noticed a place where we went and ate. One particular shop, it was a small restaurant. At the very top of the name board, it was written Pandit Ji Ka Dhaba. And then below that, the shop's name was also given. I was completely taken aback and surprised to see if you are actually giving the name to that shop, that restaurant, a certain name, which I don't remember at this point. Why would you put Pandit Ji Ka Dhaba on top and then the name below? Then when I spoke with my friend, I realized that there are certain people who would not eat if the food is cooked by someone else, and for them, when it says Pandit Ji Ka Dhaba, then okay, they only eat out of the hand of pandits. And this is, you know, outright, one, it is not civilized behavior. Two, in my view, it is in violation of pretty much every piece of the constitution that is against that caste structure. But it is just there. Right next to it, there is another restaurant which is not necessarily run by a pandit because it just had the name. It did not have any other caste indication on top. Now, is this very normal there? That is point one. And I want you to help me understand this affinity towards caste and affinity towards God. How are these two connected in that part of our country?
See, especially you have talked about Noida. I am talking about the North Campus, Delhi University. We have a famous canteen known as Pandit Ji Ki Canteen. It is situated on the land of the university, which is owned by the university. You have put a board, Pandit Ji Ki Canteen.
Okay.
What does it show, man? You have put the board, Pandit Ji Ki Canteen. You will find Pandit Ji Ki Momos. You will find a person known as Sudama Chai. You will scan that Paytm and you will get to know that he's a Mishra. These all are interlinked. That the person who is giving them the authority, might most probably he is also a Brahmin. because he will not give a permission to an so-called lower caste person. So this is the scenario in the North campus, especially I have lived in the North campus. This is the scenario. You will find Sharmaji ke momos, Sharmaji ke hot dogs. You will find all these things there. So it is a very, I think that it is not a common thing, because you are putting board of your caste. And suppose I own a canteen and I put a board, Chamarji ki canteen, yeah, Dalit's canteen. Who will come into that canteen?
So they would boycott it?
Of course they will boycott it. Okay. Who is going to take that risk?
Now, what I'm not able to understand is, if in a rural village where people are uneducated, if they boycott the Dalit canteen, I can understand they are uneducated. Probably they are not fully aware of the reality, and it is okay, I can at least forgive them. But educated people doing this inside a city and urban landscape, to me that is frankly unbelievable. Where they, I was surprised at Pandit Ji Ka Dhaba in Noida. Now I realize there is Pandit Ji Ka canteen inside a university which teaches law.
In the main campus, you will find that canteen near to the wire pole. It is the hostel. And it is a very famous old canteen. You will find all these things. Even on 14th of April, when we have applied posters of Bab Sahib in the famous library known as Central Library in the North Campus. Next day, the posters were teared by the so-called educated students.
Okay, so they don't want Ambedkar anywhere.
No, they do not want Ambedkar. Even we have applied flags of Jai Bhim in my college. The students thrown them. Next day we went and we have collected those flags. And the fact is, we can also file an FIR under SCAC Act. But who is going to take that risk?
Yeah.
That is the main problem.
They won't take action.
Somewhere the authorities are also supporting them. That's the main issue.
Before we move on, just a small logistic prompt. Because I'm using a free version of Zoom, at 40 minutes it will automatically cut. We will just have to re-log in into the same meeting, okay, just in case if it cuts. But I'm waiting to hear from you in terms of people accepting and liking this caste system, and people accepting and liking their God. How do you see that relation? Because to me, it is that fundamental system of faith which has taught them the caste structure, because there cannot be a Hindu without a caste. If someone is subscribing to that Hindu Sanatan Dharma, then they subscribe to the caste structure and so on. So, but hasn't anyone spoken about this from a Andhvishwas standpoint? Hey, these are not reality, this is not fact. You can believe in God from a sentimental standpoint, but then you having a varna vyavastha in play in the society is uncivilized. That has no scientific background and it is not true. Any power or any entity which promotes that sort of a varna vyavastha cannot be a God in the first place. If there is a God, it has to say all living creatures are equal. A God cannot see two living creatures, one above the other. And the very concept of humans being one above the other is just unacceptable. But has anyone, ignoring, the Ambedkars, Periyars, Phules and so on, ignoring those leaders, has anyone others from the mainstream politics spoken against these in that part of our country?
See, I think talking about God and caste at the same time is just like separating the oil and water. I have asked a Brahmin student who was so-called also a friend of mine. I asked him that, man, what do you think about that you are Pandey? So I asked him that, what do you think about caste? Then he said, I don't believe in caste system. everyone is equal now. Then I said that I want to become a pandit of this temple. Can you support me? Then he was shocked that what he is saying. Then I told that this is caste, brother. Dr. Ambedkar also said that in India, especially the Hindus, even they are educated. When the question of their caste arises, that they have to support their caste, they forget all the education they have earned. So caste is something which cannot be get away from the minds of the so-called upper caste, even the forward caste people also, because in Haryana the Jats are very dominant. So this is the main problem. Even you cannot say to them that you are not an upper caste.
Mm-hmm.
They will say that we are upper caste. Then I said that you are forward. That you are forward caste people, not you are an upper caste according to the Varna system. Then they said that we don't believe in the Varna system. We are upper than we are upper. We have decided that we are upper. It is not that casteism is prevailed amongst them. It is a Brahminism. We have to differentiate the casteism and Brahminism. A Brahmin can also be a casteist at a particular point of time, and also can he be a liberal or anti-casteist. If an SCST OBC person become anti-casteist, then the problem arises. If he become casteist at a particular time, then again the problem arises.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, especially in the university, you will find a lot of people like it. They will be anti-casteist at a particular point of time. They come to the Ambedkar Jayanti. They also come to the camps of the RSS.
Hmm.
What do you want to convey? One time they are getting liberal, and at the same time they are becoming a casteist. Especially I will say that in the camps of RSS or in the meetings of the so-called right wingers party, they become casteist, and in front of us, when they want our support, they want to give sympathy or empathy, they become liberal, that it's wrong, it's where casteism is very wrong, it is against the spirit of the constitution, and all these things they start saying, but the reality is different.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can ask that same question, that if you are going to marry, then what will you choose? Are you going to marry a non-Brahmin girl? Then he will say, no, my parents will not allow this. What is that? I'm not able to understand. They are saying that they will marry according to the permission of their father or their mother, but they can get into relationship with an SC girl. This is the main problem.
Mm-hmm.
Also, they can defend it by saying that it is my individual choice, but it is not the thing. It is not his individual choice.
Mm-hmm.
The choice of marriage, the decision of marriage, although solely lies on him, on the boy, but he will say that my father or mother will not allow this.
Mm-hmm.
If you cannot manage, or you cannot even ask permission for the marriage, your father, that I want to marry a non-Brahmin girl, then what kind of liberal you are? Or what kind of anti-caste you are?
Mm-hmm.
This is the main thing, in the, especially in the university campus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, you did mention presence of RSS in the educational institution. Here in the South, specifically in Tamil Nadu, we are noticing the rise of RSS, so to speak,
there have been many shakas that have been opened, excuse me, in the school segment, where school kids are being recruited into those shakas, those daily shakas, and they are being trained in the name of, you know, we will teach you to play the flute, we will teach you life skills and so on. Only the boys, not the girls, here. And then it almost always is run by one or a few of the teachers in those very schools. And this activity has percolated even into the government schools. Now, as a collective society, the majority opinion here in Tamil Nadu, we disagree with RSS. We do not want our kids to be, you know, in any connection with RSS. But the fact is, there are people in Tamil Nadu who are officially members of RSS. And right now, there are thousands of shakas running, where innocent school kids are part of. Now, I want to understand, what is the perception of RSS in that part of our country? How did you see RSS, say, 10, 15 years back? And how has RSS changed in terms of its form in that part of our country?
See, it depends on the political power that in current regime, they are more powerful. They are radical organizations like VHP or Bajrang Dal. Even the shakas that you have mentioned are also organized in the university campus in the evenings. So that is the main thing, that you are allowing the shakas inside the campus of the university, nearby the library, central library. But students are studying at the same time, and at the same time the shaka is being organized in the premises of the university. So if you look at the 10 to 15 years you have told, you can see their power by viewing this as, watching this as, that before 4 to 5 years or 7 years, there was no RSS shaka was organized in the campus. But now you can freely talk about radicalism. They can freely talk about their agendas. They can do anything they want to do in the campus. But if you want to celebrate the Ambedkar Jayanti, then you will not get permission in the campus that you want to celebrate it. If you want to celebrate Jayanti of Saab Kanshiram, you will not get the permission. But they do not need permission of any kind. This is the power of the RSS, especially in the educational institutions. You can find their professors in the campus. You can find their men in the campus, their wounds in the campus. They call...
Are these students of the university, students or employees?
Yeah. They are students of the university. Even most of them I know by face that they are the students of law faculty. But some students are from outside also who teach them. They might be some, they call them as Pranth Mantri, or I don't know, but there was also a, you know, that post in the RSS. They give them the title. So they are not from the campus, but students are from the campus. So you can see that thing in the campus, and you can also realize that something is going wrong. Even you cannot speak in front of them.
What will they do?
Of course, there is a fear they will gather, and might be there might be a mob lynching also. Anything can happen.
So inside the campus?
It might be.
Okay.
It might be. Because we have that fear, most of the students have that fear that it can happen also. If there are 15 to 20 or 25 students in the campus in the shaka, then it can happen.
Now,
if you are going to speak against them.
It is clear that the entire nation is aware of what RSS is and what are its activities and ambitions. Now, if someone, you know, if people are being so openly being recruited and they are being part of RSS and its activities, won't their families feel bad about it? What is the perception of their families? Would a family in your part of our country, you know, happily accept that their son or daughter is part of Bajrang Dal, VHP or RSS, and are they just happily allowing it?
Actually, it depends upon the caste, that from which caste do you belong. If you are a Brahmin, then and you are going to the RSS, then there are much more possibilities that if you are doing LLM or PhD in the law, then there are much more possibilities that you are also going to become professor one day in the university, because they sit in the interview board. So they happily send their children. But when an SCSC student went into the shakas, so the thing is about the family that you are talking. Most of the SCST family in the rural villages, especially in north, do not know about the RSS, that what is the RSS. As you have said that in Tamil Nadu, they come to the school and they say that, do you want to learn the flute? Do you learn the music? These kind of, it is a step-by-step process. That first you give a flute, and after that in the end you give a sword to them. So this is the main thing. Our people do not understand this. If you are a PhD student or an LLM student, then, and you know that people are, RSS people are sitting in the interview board, then for your personal benefit, you will go to the shakar.
Okay, so being part of RSS comes with its own set of benefits, and there are people who join RSS for the sake of those benefits, not necessarily for RSS philosophies and ambitions.
Yeah, of course, as I've said, it depends on the caste. You will not find a Brahmin person fighting in fighting against the Muslims. You will always find the OBCs or SCST in that mode.
That is where I want to understand. See, the very founders and the entire organization of RSS is built, operated and controlled by predominantly Brahmins. But RSS members range, include Brahmins and non-Brahmins. But when it comes to violence, be it violence against Muslims or violence against Dalits or women, it is almost always a non-Brahmin who's associated with RSS, who's doing that. Is my assumption correct that it is the Brahmin leadership which is convincing the non-Brahmin RSS members to indulge in violence? Or is it just the misunderstanding of the non-Brahmin RSS workers that is resulting in violence? How come no Brahmin does the rioting, the Gaurakshak gangs beating innocent Muslims to death? It is almost always the non-Brahmin RSS crowd. How come the Brahmin RSS crowd controls the things, but non-Brahmin is the one who commits the murder? What is the link there?
The link I can see is the upbringings. See, if I look at especially the SCST students, then the luxury life they do not get in the rural area, or they do not, if an OBC or SC person going to meet a big person, then he will be very fond of him. That, oh, I met a big person. I met, for example, I met Ambani. It is the daily work of a Brahmin that he get indulges with them. He talks to the professors regularly. He talks to the judges. He talks to the lawyers. And one day when a Brahmin says to an SCST OBC person that I wants to make you meet to the judge, then he feels very proud. And somewhere the Brahmin boy will also say that you are my best friend. That's why I am going to take along with me. This is the main reason, that feeling of that inferiority, that I haven't got the opportunity to meet a judge in my whole life, and this Brahmin person gave this opportunity to me. This is the main thing I can see and observe in the campus. Because as I have told that about the internship thing, if our people come to the university, SCST OBC organizations, lower organization come to the universities, the former judges, former professors, or VCs come to the university and say that we are working for our children, we are working for you, then why do the SCST OBC student go in the shakhas? What will be the need of it? It is the failure of our community, I think, of the organizations, that they do not meet to the students. And especially the guidance program, even the guidance program is not given by our lawyers and professors, or we say the judges who are former judges, IAS, IPSs. So this is the main problem. But if we compare to the so-called upper caste people, they regularly arrange these things. This is the main reason, I think, that our people went there and they do violence also.
So are you saying Dalits who are part of RSS also indulge in violence?
I haven't seen that. I recognize an incident of Babri Masjid where a cobbler who is still working as a cobbler, and at that point of time he was also working as a cobbler, has his life changed, nothing has been changed. But at that point of time, a worker who might be an upper caste, his life, of course, he might be a big person, or he might be somewhere on the government job. This is the main reason. This difference is not understood by our people.
So
I think our people are very emotional. I feel it that if I say to any person, to a Brahmin person, that I'm your best friend, then he will at that point of time, he will say that in his mind that, oh, he sees some benefit in me. But our person say that, oh, he is my good friend, that's why he is giving me this opportunity. This is the main difference, I think, I have observed in the campus.
You're saying there is a popular opinion amongst the Dalits that if they are not friends with the Brahmins, they will not go up or come up in life. They might not get the best of the opportunities. And for the sake of it, they literally tolerate a submissive relationship with a Brahmin just in the hopes that that Brahmin might open the doors for me. Is that the case?
Actually, it depends person to individual.
Agree.
that how a person understand the caste system. Even if you go to the low colleges, most of the art students do not understand about the Varna system or caste system, that how it's function, what barriers it causes to us. This is the main, I think, reason I have observed in the campus, that our people feels that they should do friendship with the Brahmin. Because in my whole college life, I talked to the Brahmins, but I haven't, make any friend from the Brahmin community. This is the understanding of the caste system. This is a thing that why should I waste time on my so-called Brahmin friends? I should spend that time on my education or on my community, that I should avail my community. Yes.
The point that we haven't touched yet in the previous question is this. Let me look at it from this angle. The ongoing conflict or violence in Haryana, Al Jazeera has even taken notice of it, and the videos are out. In one such video, we see these Hindutva propagandists, probably the RSS, they are literally shouting in the speaker, "Mulle ko kaatenge, Ram Ram chillayenge," and they are just doing that and walking along the street in plain view. Technically, that very statement violates the constitution. It is a crime, but never mind the crime. Who are they? Are they Brahmins? Which segment do they come from?
how do those people end up in that situation in the Hindutva group where they are openly saying mulle ko kaatenge ram ram chillayenge? Where do they get it, and you know, where do they come from, and how are they converted into those machines that they are operating as?
Yeah, actually it depends on the political power. If you are provoking any particular community, so the police is under the hand of a political party. See, okay, and the person who is giving slogans, who is raising slogan wars, also from that political party. So you can see this incident as compared to the 1984-6 riots in Delhi. This same thing was happened in the regime of Congress also. This same thing happened in Babri Masjid also. Because see, I see it as a as from a different angle. It is not Hindu versus Muslim. जब तक इंडिया में मुस्लिम्स है शेड्यूल कास्ट के ऊपर एट्रोसिटीज का, अगर शेड्यूल का जिस दिन यहाँ से मुस्लिम्स चले जाएंगे उस दिन एट्रोसिटीज शेड्यूल कास्ट के ऊपर ज्यादा होंगी. बिकॉज इट इज यू नो इट इज टू मेक दैट थिंग कि यू आर यू शुड इग्नोर द कास्ट. इट इज ऑलवेज हिंदू वर्सेज मुस्लिम. इट इज नेवर हिंदू वर्सेज मुस्लिम. The people who are fighting from the Muslim sides or from Hindu sides are always the Dalit Hindus or overseas Hindus, and from the side of Muslims, it is always the Pasmanda Muslims or the Dalit Muslims. The upper caste Muslim is enjoying in their community, and the upper caste Hindu is enjoying in their community. Even they marry their daughters with the Muslims. The Muslims marry their daughter with the upper caste Hindus. This whole fight is to make this thing forget that there is no caste in the society, there is no caste in the Muslims, there is no caste in the Hindus. Because Hindu and Muslims, SCST OBC people are engaged in this conversation that it is always Hindu versus Muslim. To do not make this thing understand that it is not Hindu versus Muslim, it is they are using us as a tools. That SCST OBCs should fight against the Pasmanda Muslims or Dalit Muslims. These are, I say, these are the brothers. These are the ancestries' brothers who have changed their religion. So I see this at from a different angle. That although he raised some slogans that मुल्ले काटे जाएंगे राम राम चिल्लाएंगे समथिंग लाइक दैट, बट द थिंग इज दैट हु इज फाइटिंग फ्रॉम द साइड ऑफ हिंदूज बाय लिसनिंग दीज स्लोगन्स. इट इज ऑलवेज द एससीएसटी ओबीसी पीपल. द यू विल नॉट फाइंड अ सिंगल ब्राह्मण कैरिंग अ स्वॉर्ड इन द राइट्स. यू विल नॉट फाइंड.
व्हाई इज दैट सो?
इट इज दैट्स दैट थिंग आई एम टेलिंग यू ना. It is because that they are very sharp. They are using us. That's why their children are studying in the Harvard universities. It is because that they do not want that SCST OBCs should focus on their education, should focus on their rights, should focus on their children's right, should focus on their children's education, to make this thing forget. The so-called Hindutva forces or so-called Muslims forces encourage their SCST or Pasmanda or Dalit Muslims to, you know, fight amongst each other. This is the thing. We have to understand it.
It is interesting that you point, and you did clear my mind in that regard. For the first time I'm hearing, you know, one is clear that while the Brahmins control the Hindutva propaganda, they are not necessarily the ones who come to the street and pelt stones or go and fight using weapons and guns. But it is the other OBCs and SCSTs on either side of the conflict. Even if it has to be Muslims, it is interesting to note that those who have converted to Islam from the OBC or SCST community, them and the OBCs and SCSTs within the Hindu fold are the ones who are fighting against each other. To me, if I understand this correctly, it almost is a conflict that, you know, from a Brahmin standpoint, it is a Brahman versus non-Brahman conflict where the victims are clearly non-Brahmins on either side, both on the Hindu side and the Muslim side. But my question from that is, for this the community as a whole, when I say community as a whole, the society there, isn't it obvious that the very presence of a Muslim, you know, who has converted to Islam, you know, an evidence of these caste-based discriminations? जातिगत भेदभाव के कारण ही वो मुसलमान बना, मतलब हिज फोर फादर एट सम पॉइंट डिसाइडेड आई डोंट वांट दिस सनातन धर्म एंड इट्स डिस्क्रिमिनेटरी पॉलिसीज, आई वांट टू पिक ए फेथ विच ट्रीट्स मी एज इक्वल एंड सो आई एम कन्वर्टिंग टू इस्लाम. सो द वेरी प्रेजेंस ऑफ मुस्लिम इज एन इंडिकेटर ऑफ द कैस्ट सिस्टम दैट द ब्राह्मण्स हैव इंस्टॉल्ड इन टू आवर सोसाइटी एंड बट डजंट दैट टेल देम दैट हे he is not someone who's far away or he's a foreigner, he is one of our own, he just didn't like the sanatan dharma and the varna vyavastha and so he moved to Islam, but he is from this land, he is also our brother. Doesn't that strike the people there in that part of our country?
Yeah, see, if we look at the Muslims, they some upper caste ashrafs, I believe. They are Ashrafs. They belong to their ancestry from the Muhammad, Prophet Muhammad. And some upper caste find their ancestry from the Ali. So, if we look at the Brahmins, it is, you know, the Zahir of Brahmin, Brahminism, not Brahmin. Brahminism has gone into every religion. If we look at the incident of Baba Sahib when he went to that Parsi's guest house, they do not believe in that caste system. But the Zahir of Brahminism has went till there to the Parsis also, that they didn't allow Baba Sahib to give a room to hire. That is a thing. If we look at the Christians, we find that Dalits Christian who converted into Christianity are still living a segregated life than the Brahmins who has converted into Christianity. So this is the main thing we have to understand. It is we have to look that we find these Brahmins in every community, whether it is Muslims, whether it is Christians, whether it is Parsis, whether it is Hindus. And we find the Dalits in every community. So that's what I was saying, that they are playing football with our people. The football is our people. That from Hinduism, the Brahmins kick the ball, and from Muslims, the Ashrafs kick the ball, and from Christians, I am not able to recognize that what we call the converted Christian, Brahmin Christians. Converted into the Christianity. So that
Roman but Catholics.
Not Roman Catholics at all. The Arundhati Roy, she was converted into that Christianity. I'm not able to recall that. Was she was a Brahmin and she? I think it is Nambutri Christians. I think I'm not able to recall that. Sorry, but they are playing football with our people. We find Brahmins in every religion, and it is our people who sometime go to the Christianity, who sometime go to the Islam, who sometime go to the Buddhism, who sometime go to the Hinduism. It is our people, always our people. Their children are settled, their children are studying, their children are marrying inter-religion. So it is our people. We have that हमने जो है हिंदुइज्म का भार अपने कंधों पर उठा रखा है, चाहे वो whether it is Hinduism, whether it is Islam, whether it is Christianity. In the current scenario, so they have bring a new debate that whether the SCST, whether the Dalit Christians and the Pashmanda Muslims should get status of scheduled caste. That is the main thing, that they are playing football with our people.
This is interesting. Now you know, the same perception is not necessarily prevalent here. To a large extent, yes. Now, when it comes to people who have converted to Islam here, at least in Tamil Nadu, you know, they do not necessarily claim any ancestry with anyone foreign, and you know, they speak Tamil natively. And as it turns out, while their choice of faith is Islam, they still use significantly their native language Tamil for praying in their religion. Now, the Adhan and the Namaz, they do learn Urdu or Arabic, and they do perform that in Urdu or Arabic, but they also pray in their native language here in Tamil. And Kerala, Tamil Nadu and West Bengal, if I'm not wrong, are the states where a good portion of Muslims, you know, they not only use Arabic or Urdu for their worship practices, but they also worship in their native language in addition to performing that in Arabic. For example, here in Chennai, you know, we used to live right next to a mosque. The first thing that you would hear in the morning is Thukkathai Vida Tholugai Melanadu, means namaz is more important than your sleep, please come. The adhan that they sound to call the Muslims to the mosque, the very first thing that comes out of the speaker would be in Tamil, and then in Arabic. It could be interchanged, but you will not see a situation where it is only in Arabic or Urdu, or it is only in Tamil. So what that brings us to is this point that we still hold on to our roots, our actual roots in terms of our native language. But when I look at the north part of India, and you know, my knowledge being limited, now there is Awadhi, you know, there is Marwari, Mewari, and there is Kumaoni, Gadwali, you know, Punjabi. There are so many such languages, but for many years, the Hindi, Hindu, Hindustan propaganda has literally taken over, you know, completely the north half of it. It is now trying to take over the south, but I'm not sure they are fully successful about it. I personally don't want them to be successful about it. But, you know, this, I know people who speak Gadwali or Kumaoni natively, but when I speak with them, it's all Hindi is the link language that we speak, because I do not know Kumaoni or Gadwali. But when I ask them about their knowledge of their native language, they say, hum to ghar mein bhi Hindi. So at what point did the people drop their native language and pick Hindi? And, you know, is that a fundamental platform on which this Hinduism has landed on our shoulders eventually as a consequence?
See, as you are talking about the language, for communication, we need a common language.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Tamil and I know Hindi.
Mm-hmm.
But for communication, we need English language.
Yeah.
For better understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So, in terms of Hindi or Hindustan, the term Hindustan, first of all, given by, I think, if I am correct, in the book Kitabul Hind, who was written by the poet, he was the poet in the court of Babur, he came, he mentioned the term Hind, then Babur called this whole region as a Hindustan, because he was not able to speak Sindhustan. So he says the river Sindhu to Hindu, the people who lives in the other part of the river Sindhu. So it is that point of time. If you look at the Hindi language, most of, if I look at my region, you will find that everyone can speak in Hindi, but you will find their local language mixed with the Hindi language. Pure Hindi cannot be even spoken by any professor of Hindi. Understand? That that term Hindi we understand as a common man, most of the people understand as a common man, is like that they are, you know, mix of most of the languages, like Punjabi, Haryanvi, local languages, Rajasthani, Badwali, UP, Avdi. The language we spoke, we call it as Hindi, is not Hindi at all. It is the mix of all regional languages who we speak. Like somewhere in Haryanvi or in Punjabi, some words are mixed with Rajasthani. Some words are of Sanskrit come in the English language. Nobody is talking if they the term they wants to make India as a Hindustan. So they should start by Sanskrit. Why don't they talk about Sanskrit? That Sanskrit should be taught to everyone. That is the main thing. Why they again and again emphasizing on this point that they should speak Hindi? Hindi must be imposed in the every region. Even the MPs or MLAs of every party who demands the imposition of Hindi, I am sure I challenge them that if they can speak in pure Hindi language. A professor of Hindi cannot speak in the pure Hindi language. Like the CM of Yogi Adityanath or CM of UP Yogi Adityanath, he speaks in the Hindi language. Do we find any such minister of BJP or of any XYZ party who talks about Hindi, position of Hindi, talks like him? They never talks like him. Even in the dialect of Yogi Adityanath, he speaks of the. This is the main thing. We have to understand it, that Hindi is not a, Hindi is a language, but for communication which we use, Hindi is a mix of all languages. Because if you look at even in Delhi, some poor people, labor class people, use some words of English, like common words like problem, example. These are the words they use in common language. They will not say that samasya ho gayi. They will say problem ho gayi.
It's more.
This is the main thing.
I agree with you. Now to the final question of this discussion. Despite the knowledge and clarity that RSS, BJP and their activities are causing more harm to this country, and the caste-based violence is just growing, how is that most people still end up going to the voting booth and still end up voting for BJP? Are they not aware that they are supporting a party, an organization, a philosophy that will come back and eat their own family?
See, I don't think that RSS and BJP agenda, but I think that I much more focus on this point on the term Brahminism. You will find Brahminism in Congress also. You will find Brahminism in every party. They play the caste politics. So what does the, what is the ultimate of Brahminism? To make an unequal society. To have earned the equal rights, to make them unequal. To go to the time of Manus, they want. It is not RSS or BJP or Congress or XYZ party. It is always Brahminism versus constitutionalism. That who wants, who were slaves, who were a deprived section of the society says that we want constitution, and the other to whom the constitution take their privileges. like in especially in Tamil Nadu, the CM announced that there will be reservation in the temples. You will, there is no, yeah, it is Brahminism. The Brahmins of the priests of the temple are saying that
they are not agreeing. Yeah, they're still not allowing them.
Yes.
50 pujaris have been appointed. They are not allowed inside the Garbhagraha.
So that's the point. It is not RSS, BJP, XYZ, but it is always Brahminism and constitutionalism.
Mm-hmm.
What the Babasaheb have told? Babasaheb have told that I have given all the rights. I have abolished the untouchability. I provided you right to equality. I provided you each and every right. So we are preventing the constitution.
Mm-hmm.
They are saying that we will impose the law of Manu. We have to understand, in the
mm-hmm.
current scenario, our people focus on this point that it is the only the RSS or BJP who wants to take away the constitution. At the time of Congress also, there was that emergency or the amendment of fundamental rights. They have made that Babasaheb said that if these rights are taken away, then what will be the left in the constitution? Congress government also proposed the same thing, and BJP is doing the same thing also.
Mm-hmm.
So this mind which the Rahul Gandhi, or I was watching an interview of Priyanka Gandhi, was saying that we are Kashmiri Brahmins. What does it show? What do you want to tell the country?
They don't want to drop the concept of Brahmanism anywhere.
That's what I am saying. It is not, we cannot only blame the RSS or BJP. We have to blame most of the parties who have kept that ideology of Brahmanism in their mind, that we have to blame. Yeah.
So it is interesting that you mentioned that, you know, irrespective of political parties, be it BJP, RSS or Congress, deep down under these political brand names, what is causing harm to this country and this nation's society is Brahmanism. And Brahmanism cuts across political parties, across political philosophies and even religions in many instances, where despite converting to other religions, the concept of Brahmanism and associated caste differences are carried into those faiths as well. So you know, this is where you actually agree with a lot of progressive thinkers from across the country, but more prominently, you know, from what I am aware of, what we strongly believe here in Tamil Nadu, you know, deep down, it is these caste differences, the Brahmanism, that is causing all the trouble. So now the solution, you know, it is logically very simple to say, you know, if Brahmanism is the problem, just eradicate Brahmanism. Now, if we were to eradicate Brahmanism, the question comes, if people are still going to the temples controlled by the, you know, this Brahminical philosophy, controlled by Brahmins, and still praying to the gods, you know, that the Brahmins have taught this society, the very idea of dissolving or curing or exterminating Brahmanism from this country is not going to happen. Because when you look at it from a religious standpoint, the natives of this land, the actual Mool Nivasis, they had their own worship practices. There are so many gods. I can tell you names like Sodalai Madan, Veeranar, Kalleri Muni, INR, these are names that I'm not sure you would have heard of. These are gods prayed to by Tamils here in Tamil Nadu. Now, very similarly, across the country, there are many gods that people pray to. But then all of that has, either the Brahmanism has destroyed it, removed it from the culture, or it has inculcated or integrated that into its fold and it has given it a new name. For example, there is a character called Murugan that Tamils pray to. Apparently, within the Brahminical system, they say that is the Subramanya or Kartikeya. Now, we don't know about it. This theory that Tamils follow dates much, predates the Sanskrit literature. But, you know, whatever Brahmanism can destroy, it has destroyed. Whatever it couldn't destroy, it has taken up within its fold. But given the current state of people
so vehemently or adamantly being passionate about going to temples and praying to God, you know, can this concept or idea of Brahmanism being the cause of the trouble even reach them? And should they even agree to it? How will Brahmanism be removed when everyone is just every day practicing their faith systems or their worship practices under the control of Brahmins?
Yeah, so the solution is itself given by Bab 7 Ambedkar in his book, Annihilation of Caste, that we have to abolish the source of Brahmanism. And the source of Brahmanism is the Shastras and Vedas and all these things. But in current scenario, it is so much indulged in the society. I don't think that it is possible to remove these things. But another solution is given by Sai Panchi Ram, that if you want to abolish Brahmanism. So Brahmanism, but it is protecting. We have to look at it. It is protecting that you should not intercaste, you should not do intercaste marriages, you should not do intercaste dinings. These are majorly two things that it is protecting. So Kanshiram Sahib says that if you want to eradicate Brahmanism, then you should do intercaste marriage within the SC community or within the OBC communities. That SC girl should be married to OBC boy, OBC boy, OBC girl should be married to the SC girl. And especially it is a clear fact that there is also so much differences of superiority amongst the subcaste in the scheduled caste category. Especially if we look in the northern region, there is differences between Chamats and Bangis. The Bangis are those who do manual spinning, and the Chamars are their profession was the cobbler. So the problem is they do not do intercaste marriages. If you want to abolish, it is also Brahmanism that you are not doing intercaste marriages with the Bangis girls or the Chamars girls. So Brahmanism is protecting all these things. Even the Chamars or the OBCs. OBCs do not eat food with the Bangis. That is, it is protecting. So why should the Brahman eat food or share the food with the Bangis when the OBCs are practicing? We have to look at from this scenario that we do not want to go to the, we do not want that we should go to the Brahmins and say that marry your daughter with us. When our people is not satisfied that their daughters should be married within their caste or within their sub-caste, and you are going to the Brahmins and saying that marry our daughter, your daughter with us.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, it is the same thing. Then you are also practicing Brahmanism. The roots of Brahmanism is very, you know, down. It is very strong. These roots are very strong. So we have to cut these roots. First of all, we have to start from our family, from the as an individual. We should not go to the another person and say that, hey brother, marry that girl. If you are going to marry with intercaste marriage, you are doing intercaste marriage within the scheduled caste community, then somewhere it is also destroying the Brahmanism. It is a long process. You cannot in one time say that, oh, I have done. Bab Sahib also married to Savitri. She was a Brahmin. So, what has changed? Nothing has changed. So, we have to think of this different perspective that we have to do intercaste marriage. Of course, if there will be intercaste marriage, then there will, then intercaste dining will also follow. That is the thing. Brahmanism is protecting these two things only, nothing more than that.
Of those two things, one is it is not allowing intercaste marriage. What is the second thing? Can you repeat that, please?
Second thing is intercaste dining.
Intercaste dining. Okay.
Yeah. That is the thing, it is protecting.
But here's my question. In modern times, see, there is a, we go to school together, we go to college together, and then there are different clubs and pubs and so on. We work in the same offices where, you know, we have the same lunch time. So, you know, there are so many social environments which the modern life has created, where we are forced to share the space with our fellow humans. You know, so you can't say, oh, I am a Brahman, I won't eat with you inside an office, such like that. So don't you think the elements of modernization has to some extent created the environment for inter-dining at least?
Suppose if in the school you are just leaving around 5 to 6 hours, but in the whole 18 hours you are living in your own caste society,
mm-hmm.
In the family.
Mm-hmm.
It is the force of law that is forcing you to eat food with the scheduled caste or the lower caste people. But what they are practicing at the home, in their society, it matters the most. In the school, you can teach the part of equality, but in the home or in the village, they are practicing the same thing,
mm-hmm.
that we do not go to the houses of scheduled caste. We do not want that a scheduled caste boy should sit on a horse in his marriage. That is the thing. So we have literacy and illiteracy concept in the country. But what does it show? The illiterates, the PhD professors are still practicing the same things which uneducated or illiterate Brahmin practices. What is the difference of the education?
Mm-hmm.
We have to look at it from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
That it is the upbringings of the children,
mm-hmm.
of the children, which makes him that you should, even these are the customs and norms, and if they breach those customs, then they have their you know, they have that fear that they should also be outcasted, or there might be a social boycott of his family or as an individual of him, mm-hmm. also by the whole society. That is also the fear, one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now it is interesting you bring into the concept of customs and how social boycott is used as a means to ensure people follow these customs. Now that's where my next question comes. You know, at the individual level, you did mention, you know, professors with PhDs are practicing this Brahmanism. So, you know, there is no impact of education on their behavior. You know, their civility goes out the window. But that affinity towards such caste-based custom, deep down, is a strong religious affinity towards the religion driving them to follow that custom. कहीं ऐसा है क्या कि वो ऐसे ये मानते हैं कि भाई किताब में लिखा है भगवान का शब्द है इसके साथ मत बैठो तो हम शास्त्र को मानने वाले हैं तो हम इसके साथ बैठ के नहीं खाएंगे तो दिस बिली इस डीप डाउन एट इंडिविजुअल लेवल इज द बिलीफ इन गॉड ड्राइविंग दीज इंडिविजुअल्स टू होल्ड ऑन टू दीज कैस्ट बेस्ड कस्टम्स व्हाट्स योर व्यू
See, I think that you have mentioned that it is the religion which teaches them that it is the, you know, if suppose if someone believes in the constitution and the so-called Brahmins, the Brahminist theory says that law of Manu is their law. They do not believe in the constitution.
Mm-hmm.
They believe because constitution have taken their privileges. So they believe that our forefathers who fought to maintain this hierarchy or supremacy, so it is also our duty that we should also preserve the same. But the thing is ki ye constitution kahan se aa gaya? We have to, so by this theory they are saying that the concept of God also, because if we look at the theory of Varna system, they say that Brahman is born from the mouth of the Brahma, Kshatriya is born from the shoulders of the Brahma, so this and that. So it is the Brahmins who wants to maintain this theory, but the Shudras who have understood this concept that how it is possible that we have to serve, our forefathers have served for the whole life, and now the rule changes, we got the education. That is the point. Then at that point of time, we were talking about Hindi and Sanskrit. Baba Sahib also says that we have to read Sanskrit also, that Sanskrit should be national language. The intention behind that was that if we read the Sanskrit, then we can read the Shastras or Vedas. We can get to
raise the awareness.
To get to know that what they have written.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the rule says that a Brahmin should read and teach the Vedas. So somewhere a Dalit learning or reading or teaching the Vedas or Shastras is also breaking the supremacy and the hierarchy of the Brahmins. That is the thing. That was the intention behind the imposition of the Sanskrit, that we have to read the Sanskrit. Because in many examples, you get to know that when Baba Sahib, then the Brahmins of the law college where he taught law, they boycotted him. They said that you should not drink water from our port. And Baba Sahib forcefully drank water from that port and says that I know the mantra from which you can purify this water again. And he repeated that mantra, that this is the mantra from which you can purify. So this is the benefit of learning Sanskrit. Because by learning Sanskrit, he read those mantras. He read all these things by which this is meant. Because most of the people do not know the Sanskrit language.
Mm-hmm.
That is the main thing. Even there is not a single concept of God in the Vedas, Shastra. They say that there are 33 crore Devi Devtas. So to read, to know about 33 crore Devi Devtas, we have to read the Sanskrit. And they do not want that we should read the Sanskrit. If we read the Sanskrit, then their chapter will be closed, that you have written the myths,
mm-hmm.
you have written the story. Yeah.
People will start understanding the reality if they start reading the Sanskrit literature.
That is the thing.
Interesting. Now, this has been a very interesting discussion, Saurabh, and we have gone well past, I think, 1.5 hours now. But thank you for taking time to discuss with me on this one. It is sad that even in today's time, a law graduate has to stay away from certain employment opportunities or internship opportunities purely because of the caste identity that he did not choose in the first place. None of us ever chose our caste identity. They were thrust on us. And as a consequence, those identities are obstructing opportunities to this day. And we are talking in 2023, well over 7 decades after independence. And this is the state in a democratic country which has a constitution in force. We also are noticing that the constitution is being amended left, right and center, and the laws are being deactivated where they are not able to be fully repealed. And so, as you said, the law of the Manu is trying to take control of our constitution. So, but you did very interestingly point at the party brand agnostic Brahmanism being the baseline of the issues, which is something I think all of us, within India, all Indians have to get on board with that, because that is, only when we subscribe to a common definition of the problem and we acknowledge the problem as a problem, any solution can come up. So, I'm absolutely sure, our audience here learned a lot into how caste and its customs prevail in that part of our country.
Some insights that you shared are completely new to us. You know, I am personally shocked that such a thing is even happening in practice. So what I noticed in Noida is nothing big. There are much more bigger things in play than what I have observed in my during my short stay in Noida. So but we sincerely hope, despite, and also thank you to you for standing up to that line of questioning and being honest about your caste identity, and you not lying and submitting yourself to that conversation for the sake of that internship. That demonstrates that you have demonstrated the highest levels of integrity and self-respect, which to me is a great example for our current and future generations. This is the absolute must-have, for any sustainable solution to be created. We cannot pick up our identities and have an inferiority complex about it. And you did the right thing, despite it being your friend who recommended you for that position. You stood up to him and said, "Hey, asking this question might be normal to you. It is not normal to me." So, we are in a state where, this very thing that, yeah, it is not normal to me is a statement which, technically is a democratic right, and that right is fading away right in front of our eyes. So, on behalf of, all of our audience of this show, thank you, and we wish you the very best. We sincerely hope you evolve into a lawyer who would, speak in favor of the oppressed people across the country. Thanks for taking time to speak with me.
It was very interesting in talking to you and sharing the thoughts of South and the North. And especially, it was my first podcast and it got very well. And I think we have shared different views and aspects and agreed on the same point that the theory of Brahminism, it is always the impact of Brahminism, it is always the forces of Brahminism which creates inequality in the Indian society. So it was nice talking to you, brother, and in future we will also meet if I come to the south or you come to the north, and we should also surely we will meet one day.
Absolutely. Same here. Thank you. Thanks for taking time to speak with me.
Thank you, Jai Bhim.
Jai Bhim.